Well, this will serve as an introduction here for a few comments on one-way communication and then two-way communication. You know, we have a false assumption, and that is that if we talk, we are communicating. And the fellows in the corner, or whoever were the leaders here, were talking and felt they were communicating. Now, this might be my hazard right now, too, so I'd welcome your inquiries and for you to cut in while I am talking on this. I'm going to be kind of personal in this situation. I have to talk more than about men and their problems, I guess, than I can about women. But I think sometimes there is what I call a male malady, the executive syndrome, a feeling that while we may be at the office or wherever we are, we tell other people what they're to do. And then the people out in the field don't always do what we expect them to do. And we wonder what in the world is wrong with those knotheads out there. But we have been engaging in one-way communication, similar to what you've experienced here. And I think we come home sometimes, and again, we engage in one-way communication. We're used to telling people where we are in the daytime, and we kind of carry this over into the home situation. Maybe not intentionally at all, but this is a problem. And I suppose we try to tell our pastor what to do. And I don't know if our doctor friend from Seattle is here, but I've got a guess that some patients may come to you and kind of tell you what type of diagnosis you should make, too. Is that ever true?
I don't let them do that. Yeah.
It pays, huh? Well, we get into this situation, and I think the point that Fred Schilling brought out is important here. We're dealing, in a sense, from more security when we're telling. And we're more on the hot seat when we're in that other room in there, and they're asking us questions. Because then if we make a mistake, it's kind of laid out in the open, and we have to try to correct it as we go along. But an interesting thing, too, that he brought out, and that was that the product in there, or I guess Leo did, the product in there was nearly what the fellow was trying to communicate. Whereas, frankly, some of the products out here weren't what the original person was trying to communicate. So we somehow get an authority complex. I remember a cartoon when I was in the Navy. It showed an ensign by the stripe on his sleeve in Washington, D.C., talking to a captain, and he'd ask the captain a question, and the ensign looked down, crestfallen, and the captain was pounding the desk. He says, "There's no reason for it, it's just our policy." And this is the way we are many times. We don't have reasons for these things. I think sometimes you can tell a lot about a person in a home as how they talk to the animals in a home. You ever thought about that? Or if you've got animals and you've got children, the way the children talk to the animals is pretty much the way the parents talk to the children. So you want to think about that before you get animals. And then you hear time and again where young people say they can't talk to their folks. And usually I think there is quite an authority figure present in that situation. Now, talk a little later on how husband and wife might have problems in one-way communication. But where we, in an executive position or whatever it is, can avoid talkback, we get to the position of believing that this little Hammer O'Bond card says, put it in writing. Paper remembers while people forget. And there's a lot of truth to this. But the man who puts all of his directives in writing is not allowing feedback from people, and he's going to get a poorer product, and he's going to have a lot more frustration on the job, or in the home, or in the church, or wherever you are. So I think that when we try one-way communication, we're really cut off from what I call constructive criticism that can do a better job. And let's make a little sidetrack here into the purposes maybe more related to why we're here. What about your one-way communication in your prayer life? I wonder how much of that is one-way communication. How much we do, let's say, to God like we might do to the doctor. We not only say, here's the problem, but here is the answer. That's worth considering anyway. Now, one-way communication may have its place in the military or someplace like that. But I submit that its use in many other places, in the homes and such, is inconsiderate, selfish, and it's probably inhumane. Well, now we'll talk just a little bit about two-way communication. I remember when I was introduced one time, someone said, I guess it was the time I was introducing Leo Bustead somewhere, and he got up and said, "I'm not sure what I'm going to say tonight because my mind is a blank. I've just been standing around exchanging thoughts with Ken Erickson." Now that's a type of two-way communication. Actually, when we think of two-way communication, it doesn't necessarily have to be much better than one-way communication, depending upon how much you let the other person become involved in things. Two-way communication can be very much dealing in superficialities, where in a home we kind of piggyback onto the weather and what the neighbors are doing and all this type of thing, and we never get into those personal, intimate, close discussions that are really meaningful. And I think the two-way communication is also ineffective when we don't show our true selves, when we're not honest with other people. Now I'm talking about, I think, maybe what one of the Beatles records talks about, and you can correct me on this. Isn't there one that talks something about, there's a face in the jar by the door that I put on when I go out? One of these modern records. Well, we are, I think, people of many masks. And these masks are what other people expect us to be. Until I think we're, I believe that Carol Hinderly used the word, we're kind of carbon copies of what other people think we should be. We hide our true selves. I hide my true self. I want to make a certain impression as a superintendent with the school board, with the teachers in the school system, in the church, and maybe I have a mask for each place. And this gets tiresome because I've got to carry these masks around. And there's probably nothing that's more tiring than being insincere, more frustrating than being insincere. Now, someone used to say about me, however, when we talk about being two-faced, they said, "Well, we know he's not two-faced because if he was, he wouldn't be wearing that one." But the other day, Helen was singing some songs in here, and one of her songs used the term insincere veneer. And I think we're all multi-ply veneer. Some of us might be, you know, only two-ply or three-ply veneer. But I think some of us may be six or eight-ply veneer. And it takes a lot of honesty to get to peeling this fly off and saying to you, "Hey, I've got problems," and peeling off another fly and saying, "Yeah, we have some problems in our own home," and maybe peeling off another fly and saying, "Yeah, well, it's kind of tough sometimes to talk with our adolescents in our own home," or "I'm pretty directive," or "have been pretty directive with my wife," and all this type of thing. This is threatening. It's easy to talk about successes, you see, but these protect us, these veneers. I was commenting here earlier that we had in one of our sensitivity training groups last summer a fellow, and this is a session where you try to be very honest with other people. You try to level with them, and you get to know them probably better than even your own family, if this is possible. And the trainer once said to one of the fellows who just had his veneer, maybe 10 ply around him, he said finally to him, "Don't you ever do anything that you wish you didn't do? Or don't you sometimes fail to do something that you wish you did?" Now, how would you answer that? Well, if you're really insincere and you've got to have this protection around here, you can give only the answer that he gave. And it was no. Now we all knew that this was different. But we just kind of relaxed and didn't work with him because he wasn't ready to join the group in the same way. But we're fearful of being hurt or laughed at. We're shy. There was a time when I was in, I guess it was when I was early in high school or late elementary school. I might see some people walking down the street that I knew, and for some reason, probably a little difficult to explain, I'd rather not have Freud explain it. I might cross the street because I might not want to meet these people. Now, maybe this has happened to you in your past, or maybe not. But anyway, we put up a false, I didn't ever show this, I'm sure. I had a false front to kind of cover this situation. And then some of you may have been raised in a way that was very a sincere effort on the part of your parents, but a one that hurts you, I think. And I hope you don't do it with your children. And this is the raising and the controlling by saying, what will the neighbors think? Some of you, apparently, I just got enough of a little reaction that someone else has heard this. If you control the action of a child, you might say, well, what will the neighbors think? Well, you know, pretty soon, you aren't yourself. You're what the neighbors think. Or you're what, you know, you're some what the people in church think. What the Preston thinks, the minister, and so on.
And what the people at home and village think.
Okay? Yeah. And so finally, you whittle yourself down until there's kind of nothing left. I think that Carol Hinderly used the term, we're an echo of someone else, and I kind of think that we can become a little Sir Echo. I kind of like that little in there, because that's what can happen. Well, a little bit about a family two-way communication. I'm kind of running here because of the time. There are two little comments that have some humor to them and also some pathos, I guess. One is, my wife talks to herself all the time, but she doesn't know it. She thinks I'm listening. And then there's another one about the boy who comes home to his dad and he asks him a question. And the dad's busy reading and he says, ask your mother. And the boy says, but Dad, I don't want to know that much about it. Well, the two points that concern me in these two stories, first is she thinks I'm listening. In other words, there is no communication. There's an attempt at two-way communication, but there isn't. And the second one, the dad does not have time for that child when he wants to talk about what's important to him. Now, thinking of husbands, I think husbands are just boys who have grown older, but not necessarily more mature in proportion to their age. Now, this isn't always the case, but somehow, you know, you get married and you're supposed to change, but you're still that boy grown older. And you don't like to admit this usually to someone else. And then it seems that wives want to communicate with men as a husband, sometimes at the most inopportune time. I come home and I've been tussling with maybe meeting with the school board or the businessmen's group downtown about the possibility of a $5.5 million building levy, and there's some real problems. And I'm just, you know, psychologically bushed. And you get home and I sit down with a paper, and then, you know, you might come and say, gee, I'd like to really talk to you about this problem. And, you know, your first reaction is you're up to here. You just had problems all day, but how does she know this situation if there isn't communication? Now, at the same time, it may be that husbands create this inopportunity each time the wife comes with a problem, because that's one way of escaping from, you know, handling the thing at the time. So it isn't a one-way street. It's very possibly a two-way street. And we might communicate this by nonverbal signs. You know, the facial expression, or any number of things. But the message is, the curtain is drawn, don't bother me now. And pretty soon it gets around to the point where a wife can justifiably say, but when? You know, you're always busy. You go back to the office at night. When is the time that you're refreshed and ready to tackle problems and communicate? So I think to varying degrees there are communication chasms in families. I don't know whether the chasm in the family you know about is deep and wide or shallow and easily bridged. But I think this is a rather normal thing in more families than we realize if we could take the feelings off in front of other people. I think that it's difficult for a wife to know the intensity of a husband's occupation. Actually, you can't really understand the life of a Negro and what his problems are because you haven't been a Negro. And how can the wife, you know, understand the husband? How can the husband really understand all the problems and the trials at home? It's pretty impossible. So I think that each husband thinks he communicates. But then, you know, you might go to some of these places like where you learn a little more about communication. And this is one of the reasons I'm so interested in it, because I've been so poor at it. And if you want a witness on that, you'll have to ask the Lord. He'll tell you, yeah, he was pretty lousy. He thought he was communicating, but we didn't have time. He didn't have time. The signals were there, you see. Other things are important. So all I would do now is kind of challenge some of the rest of you here. Maybe you ought to ask your wife, or maybe the wife ought to ask the husband, you know, do we really have a chance to communicate with things that are important to me? And maybe you'll get a nice picture, maybe you'll get a shock. But out of shocks come growth if you approach the things correctly. So honesty is important in this type of communication. In fact, honesty can corrode over a period of time until you become less and less honest, less and less frank. And I think that there is such a thing as a ministry of listening. Communication isn't just talking 50% of the time and the wife talking 50% of the time and back and forth. Maybe when you get home, you're going to have to listen for an hour one time, and maybe she's going to have to listen for half an hour another time. So this is the problem. I think the man may be in a position where he's talking all day, and the wife may be home where she's not talking to anybody all day. And here these two elements come together. One wants peace and quiet, maybe, and the other one wants to unload. So you have to solve these problems with some love and understanding. And then I think wives are probably girls who have new responsibilities, who are growing older and may or may not grow proportionately more mature. I think, and these are personal reactions, I think they're probably a little more romantically inclined than husbands are. A little more important to hear how he feels, or to get the nonverbal signs as to how he feels about her. Well, if we're going to talk about a little quick remedy here, all I would say is that instead of dialing the radio, instead of dialing TV, dialogue is what is needed. And this can be dialogue, you know, with your wife. dialogue with God and so on in these problems. Now a few words about nonverbal communication. We've got to get through before the stars come out. This is underestimated, the importance of nonverbal communication. The more you study this, the more dense and obtuse you can see other people are in relation to reading the signs of nonverbal communication that, once you're kind of alerted to them, stand out all over. As an individual situation, you'll find people who, you know, by the bodily movements, you know, that didn't bother me, you know, and they can hardly sit still. They're saying one thing. Their body is communicating something else. Irritation, annoyance, hurt, or resentfulness. Then what about the glance? I was talking with someone today, and they mentioned the glance that can pin a husband or a wife to the wall clear across the room at a party. You know, and then someone, and that, whoever, what they were saying stopped at that point. That's nonverbal communication. Superiority or aloofness. Now, I don't think this is intended. There are all kinds of us here. There's some of us who give signs that we don't want to give, of aloofness and superiority. I think of a fellow, a teacher I hired. His recommendations were fine, but the other people said, well, he gives the air of superiority. I sat down afterwards, I said, look, you're a boy, you're a fine teacher, would you like to know more about what other people think of you? And I shared a little of this, not the source, but the content. And he was mad, not at me, but he was mad that these other people hadn't had the guts to say to him, well, you know, this is the way you affect me. And he appreciated the effort. Well, laughing at people is another type of communication, and I think one of the cruelest types of communication. I'm going to write an article on, are you chiseling on your spouse? And I mean chiseling in the way of chipping away at the self-concept of a person until there's little left in the way of self-concept through laughing and other types of signs. And killing or assassination is a form of communication. Well, what about some group communication of a nonverbal type? Voting. When the citizens vote down the school budget 3 times, they're telling the board something. Yeah. No question about it. When your employees join a union, they're telling you something. When there are boycotts of businesses, or when, if you all got up and walked out right now, you'd be communicating loud and clear. Washington, D.C. rioting, or the burning in Washington, D.C. I was there after the burning, and a friend of mine took me through this area. And there was a lot of nonverbal communication there, because here is a block of 10 business firms. 7 burned out, 3 saved. Now, maybe these had soul, brother, on them. Maybe they were operated by Negroes. But they might be operated by white people who were understanding of them. And the ones that went first were those who were least understanding. And they even went to the point in selective burning where they formed a human chain around the new Safeway store that they had pride in and that had exercised some very fine employment policies, and they saved that. So you can burn and say a lot at the same time. And they say that rioting is a form of communication when all other forms of communication have failed. Now, some positive types of communication non-verbally. How do you tell a baby that he's loved? All nonverbal communication. What about, I talked about the glance that could pin someone to the wall. What about the glance at a wedding between the new husband and wife? There's lots of communication in it. What about touching somebody, a reassuring pat or whatever it is? Some of you know that we've had a fellow living with us, you call a second son. There happens to be a very fine Negro student. And I didn't notice this. But after, oh, I don't know, what, 5 months, 4 months, my wife said, did you notice that Jim put his arm around your shoulder or something like that the other day? And I said, well, I haven't noticed too much. Well, she said, that's the first time. Well, at this grew with association, but the touch can mean a lot to someone else with nonverbal communication. The emotions we show are nonverbal communication. And how do you convey that you care for people? I think of my wife's work with the Spanish-American migrants. If she gets them a mattress because they've gotten into a house and there's no furniture, or if there's wood gotten for a home in wintertime where there's no fuel, or if she invites them into the home as guests for coffee or tea or tortillas or whatever it is. Or if there's a thrift sale where you charge just a few pennies for clothes so that they don't feel like they are being getting charity and so on. Isn't that communicating? Communicating concern? And what good would it do if we got together and said, we care for these people? And then finally, I suppose Christ's greatest communication is nonverbal. And these were his acts that we can see. So what my point here is, we underestimate, we minimize, we overlook nonverbal communication. And you can communicate with people around here in the village time and time again, nonverbally, smiling, reassuring, whatever it is. Well, just a couple of minutes and our time is up, and this is a comment on communication with teenagers. Someone asked about this, and I don't claim to be an expert. All I can kind of say is be facetious, I suppose, and say if you're starting when they're teenagers, it's too late, and this is no help. But I suppose families that do things together, coming up here together, camping together, hiking together, whatever it is, this is a real asset. And we have found, I believe, that while there are many homes where they say, gee, we just can't communicate, it's our belief and our experience that they wish, they are talking about high school students like that, that they wish to communicate. If the adults are available, at their time, I don't mean the adults' time, and willing to listen to their topic. And you can't have anything phony about your interest. It can't be instant on interest and instant off interest. It's got to be full-time attention. Here again, I think of a new interest in our family. I don't think my wife had gone to more than 4 athletic events the first 20 years of our life. Is that about right? I think something like that. Well, then with 2 boys coming along, I suppose she's gone to, I don't know how many, cross-country meets, track meets, basketball games, and some football games. And I've gone to about every one I could, too. And just to show you, she might resent, no, I don't think she would. She had read Sports Illustrated, an article in there, when it came recently before the boys got a hold of it. Even has gotten a real interest in what some of the Beatles and other records say and the good music that some of them really have. And a lot of it, you know, just kind of, we put it all in one category and it's not good and shove it in the corner. Be interested in what they have. We can't try to get them always interested in our, if I'm collecting rocks, or you're chasing butterflies, or whatever it is. To get them interested in what we want isn't necessarily what we're worth. Then one other thing, and that's the field of devotion. I suppose everybody does it differently or doesn't do it at all. Lots of variety here. In our home, it isn't done with, I guess I can say, with monotonous regularity. What I'm saying is, I think if it gets to be so ritualistic that, you know, it's just like you brush your teeth after eating or so on, it loses maybe some of its meaning. Maybe we'll have devotions 3 nights running, maybe not for 3 nights. It'll vary a little bit like this. It's comfortable. Usually it's when the first one is going to bed at night. Maybe the fellows are still up studying, but they take a break at that time. Get into comfortable positions. Maybe they're reclining on the floor or on the bed or something like that. They're all involved because we take turns. Try to go from the tallest one down so you always remember. When it's over with, there's something different about the atmosphere. It's kind of a peaceful atmosphere. A non-rush, maybe they were busy studying, a non-rushed atmosphere. An open, free, quiet time first. No one feels embarrassed that it's quiet. And maybe there's a comment to start. And we have found that, at least in our own situation, that at this particular time, conversation just kind of flows out. To the point even that maybe Lois is kind of trying to keep her eyes open, you know, and it's half hour later, and she really probably likes to go to sleep. But we have never sent them away. Talking goes on until it kind of peters out, and then it's back to the work and so on. As I say, if opportunities are made, if you have the real interest in them, I think they wish to communicate. Well, it's 1 minute after 11. You've been very patient. I think there are those who wish to go out stargazing. Leo, I think we'll call it quits, and if some wish to stay and ask questions,
that's what I was
we can hang around. Huh?
For Fred wants to go. Fred wants to
stay. Yeah.
No, I'll stick around. And,
Fred has had a lot of experience with this national training lab, sensitivity training, and so on. And
Sometimes people would be interested in 45 minutes to an hour of nonverbal exercise. I'd be glad to do some of this thing.
I'd recommend it highly if you could get Fred to do that.
How about tonight? The stars don't seem to be out.
Is it on or off?
I don't know.
I'll go out to see for you. Now I'm sure I can be the communicator.
No, Carol, the glasses go up, but Larry's not going down.
He is. Okay.
Well, I'm with Fred for a good hour.
Fred, you're on. Well, why don't we give them a chance to stretch, and if someone wishes to melt away, fine, and those who wish to stay, but I think you'll find a way out.
Am I a client?
I graduated from seminary.
Yeah, I'm a lady.
Where
do
you
want
to
go?
Wait, there's a question. Let's start with your name. Ruth, I'm sorry. Ruth has a question, and we can go from there or in whatever direction you want to.
Well, I just feel if you hear too much about this nonverbal communication, it's going to be an artificial thing. You think that you better communicate a certain way, and it's not really what you feel. You might smile at somebody, but it's not really how you feel towards them. So that isn't really a communication.
But in the sense that I would be so self-conscious of what I'm trying to do, that this would get in my way.
Now you feel that being at home and really you want to be kind to others, so you smile at me even though you don't suck. Now that's
just... You know who was the one that said about home and village?
But
now
don't we just want to learn about it so we can know more about the communication instead of make that up? We're just trying to be able to interpret it better.
Could I point out a real good evidence of nonverbal communication when you turned around? what did he tell you then?
Yeah. You can assume until you check, just like she indicated there what she thought I was conveying, and I affirmed or indicated yes, I was conveying this gut. Or to have someone like Ken, you know, bring this into each other so that we could see that, by golly, we were communicating with each other.
That would be interesting to talk about Holden Village and some of the ways that people relate to each other here. I find that often people say hi to me because they feel they have to, because they see me on a trail or something. And I know sometimes I'm just off, like I'd like to be alone, and I don't really feel like saying hi or smiling. Maybe I'm some other place. And I wonder, to follow up with you, Steph, if sometimes it wouldn't mean more to me if I saw somebody coming by deep in thought, to lead him that way and not let, making sure that he had to stop and say, oh, hi. You know, because that's not really where he is. He really is deep in thought. I'd rather see him the way he really is. Maybe there, both of us being deep in thought, something could happen, you know. But when it's high, I think, man, you're not where I am.
But then
if
you
do
have to sort of observe that person, and if they look at you with long eyes,
in the woods?
Or if they just sort of were looking off in the space or were sort of, you know, thinking looking at the ground, then you know that maybe you shouldn't say anything when you're close to your eyes. And again, it would depend upon, you know, how you read what they were doing.
Well, I'm talking about the one that doesn't let you read, that changes and is phony while you happen to be there. You know, in other words, he may really be deep in thought, but when the minute he sees you, he thinks, I gotta say hello. And he goes, hi! And that's not the way he's feeling at all.
Yeah.
I think that's what I think she was saying.
Yeah.
being dishonest about us being verbal or not. Yeah. But then what do you stop and say, hey, that was phony. That was a phony pie. That all day. Because you can tell what it is.
Well, I think it's
just
kind of
like
when you say,
hey, that's a good line. But then you'd have to say no. Where would that
well,
be?
Well, you'd probably say yes. Why do you think it's always good sometimes if you want to be? I mean, I think it's always good to exactly show people exactly
how you feel. I mean, if you feel pretty grouchy, what's the use of letting other people
know it all the time? It's hard to
hide no matter what you do.
No, it's not. I think some people are able to hide very well.
I asked the question, what happens if you try to hide it and you aren't successful in hiding it? Does the other person, how does the other person get a signal now?
Rather than them thinking you feel blocking, they would take it as your reaction to them. You know, that as their reaction to you. That is, that you don't like them, rather than you feeling blocking, you don't like them, you know, you don't really care what you're saying. It would be, when you're playing the game, it's easier to misinterpret it, I think, when you're being open and honest. And again, depends on the level of
supposed to be.
my comments there were to be honest about the feelings that are present at the time. If I am really irritated about something, and I pretend that, it's all right, but my actions don't show it, I'm sending out two signals which would be confusing. And if you get, it's kind of like you get to the street corner and the light is both red and green, what are you going to do? It's confusing. And in my opinion, it is far more honest and helpful if I candidly say, well, boy, that, you probably may not have meant it, but I'm really irritated at the way you did such and such. Wife then knows how I feel about that. She gets a clear signal, and we can do something about this decision in marriage quite easily. So I guess I'm saying yes in a long way.
Now,
you've had a
really
bad day, and
your
wife
has a problem
with
discussing
this,
and you just are not in a mood to discuss it.
Are you going to discuss it, or aren't you? Well, I'm confused because he's shaking his head. He's communicating something that I'm not quite sure. In my situation, I think I would say, well, I would have to try to find out the severity of this. I think I should first say, boy, this has been one of the worst days I've had. If we can wait until after dinner and the dishes are done and sit down, this would be better. But if it's really critical now, why, then it's critical. We'll just have to postpone things and take care of it right now. But she knows exactly where I stand then. Otherwise, I would say it'd be quite confusing if I tried to double up.
Well, speaking as a wife,
this can be pretty dangerous, but go right.
I would say that it is much better to receive the one signal. I mean, if he was irritated or something, it's much better for him to say, well, I feel a little, you see, we're only talking about feelings, not about anything else, but the feelings of the moment. And if he says, I feel irritated because you said that, then we can get it all settled right then and there. And there's no resentment or any hangover which builds up in your brain over a period of time. It's all settled right then and there. And then maybe I explain why I had said it that way, or I didn't mean it that way, which, if that's true, it should always be the truth, anyway, not just a cover-up. So, but then you do sort of, as a wife, you can tell if your husband's had this horrible day at the office. And then this horrible thing that you have to discuss with him doesn't seem quite so bad. Maybe it can wait a while, and you can pick a more opportune moment. So it works that way, too.
One of the ways we use might be helpful, it depends on the emergency, or how urgent the situation is. But before my wife broke her hip, I mean, with our usual custom, somewhere between 10 and 11, to go out for a walk. And it's a useful thing because it's... you don't have a radio if you're a TV. You can't read the newspaper because it's dark out there. You don't have too many things interrupting, And so it's just sort of you and her. And this is where we discuss the world situation, where I settle the Chinese and Vietnam situation, and a small decision, But also, where we really get down to the nitty gritty, and link to the walks or determine, the size of the problem. And, But you see then, you see, you have a set time, which is the listening hour, and it's a very useful thing. And it was sort of a blessing in disguise. I should look around and see if my daughters are here, but, you know, because my wife could go on, so I go out running some of the night, slowly. And so I take, my one daughter home for most of the time, but if there was another, but I much prefer, well, now and then it's nice to have both of them, but it's better if you just have one along, you know? And it's a listening session, you know, to find out a lot of things, because there again, you don't have, you know, anything really interrupting you much. Or just a ride in a car, you know, with one other person, you know? This is a real good time to listen. And if you have these set times, it's a very useful thing.
Imagination is a tremendous thing, and imagination can begin to play. You know, I wonder what is wrong. You know, when you get confusing signals, or you're not leveling as to how you feel and reason, and this builds, and anyone just gets worse and worse.
Yeah, I have a couple of illustrations to back that up. A minister friend of mine and another guy were very close. And one day the minister friend was walking downtown, and his buddy got out of the car a half block ahead and looked down at the ground and didn't even recognize the minister as he walked by. So the minister friend wondered, now what did I do? What happened between the two of us? They didn't even say hello. And they didn't see each other for 6 weeks. And in that time, the minister had built up all kinds of concoctions of guilt and anger and irritation, and that their friendship was in danger. And they met a couple of times after that, and he was quite reserved. He hid his feelings, and they just went about doing the business, until finally the minister's friend said, well, what was going on, you know, that other month, 2 months ago, when you got out of the car? You didn't even say hello to me. And he said he had dropped a dime on the street, and he was looking for the dime. And it almost ruined a good relationship out of the misuse of the imagination. This nonverbal that you brought up, for those of you who are unmarried, 95% of your communication is nonverbal. When you come into a room, you look at the text. That is strictly nonverbal. And you move from there, and much of it is nonverbal. And that one of the best ways a person can develop oneself to catch a spouse is to cultivate and develop your nonverbal signal.
One of the very good nonverbal ways of communicating, ignoring, is just walking.
Can I just have a comment that is, that is, can be nonverbal or verbal, and it seems to be a hangout between single men and women, and that is that women naturally have stronger feelings, or at least perhaps maybe if a woman did have a strong feeling early in the relationship, she of course cannot express it because it's, of course, the role of the man to
first lay the relationship, you know, on the line or explain what's happening there, you know. And the girl is not supposed to express or exhibit this kind of feeling first. And I think that often this, of course, can drive the girl out of mind, wondering where are we and everything. I know I'm feeling this way, I don't know how he's feeling. And yet, for her to actually share how she feels is terribly inappropriate. So what does she do? I know I had an experience once where I'd been dating a fellow quite steadily, and all of a sudden I just wasn't seeing him so much anymore. And I got mad, really angry at him. And I mean, if all I do, man, I could have strung him up on the nearest pole and a lot of other things. And I really didn't know what was happening. I thought things were going pretty good. And so finally one day I was brazen enough to go to him, and I just said, quite frankly, I'm very angry with you. And I was going to try my nonverbals, I mean, my approach gives it the feeling, doesn't it? So I explained to him I was very angry with him, and he said, well, why? And I said, well, I haven't seen you so long time. And he said, in some other words, he didn't exactly express this way, he says, well, I'm glad you finally got the message. You know, he didn't want to see me anymore, you know. And he had tried to tell me nonverbally, and I hadn't gotten the message. So, you know, I think this is a very delicate area between men and women and the pride of the man doing the leading and the woman feeling maybe more intensely and not being able to do anything about it because she'll be out of line. Did you see respond to that? You went through it. You're
through mother's
I think, you know, this is meant in all kindness, but I suppose maybe the nonverbal message was there and the heart didn't want to read it. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah. That was so, yeah. Well, see, I was someplace that he wasn't in the relationship. If he had communicated this to me earlier, I wouldn't have gotten so involved.
Yeah, this now, from way back, I remember somewhere, that's kind of hard to do. But I think honestly, in reactions all the way along might have helped, but this was kind of difficult. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Jeff?
Yeah,
why don't you need a girl? No, Scott, in the
phone?
Well, I don't know, maybe what's wrong is that the guys are called the shots.
What?
They call the shots. Oh, they, what does it mean? I don't know, you explain it. You disagree.
That's the direction, say what's going on, take the lead.
I think the girl called herself
Shall we share our communication? No?
Share
the communication you just had with the
group? Hi. I'm afraid.
Oh, we were just laughing here. I said, that came from Baxter Corner over there, you know, that last comment. And then it wasn't nonverbal, but it was both verbal and nonverbal. Oh! They're marked men. I was thinking one little comment, and I don't want to get us off the track, but maybe it's a good point to detour from. The comment about the fellow who he just had his 40th wedding anniversary, and he was in excellent health, and they had a party for the husband and wife, and someone said, how in the world are you staying in such good physical condition? Well, he said, early in a married life, we decided that whenever we were coming to an argument, I'd take my hat and I'd walk around the block. And he says, you'd be surprised what 40 years in the open air does to you.
male and the woman, and the female. And the problem that the woman feels more intensely sometimes than the man isn't able to express his feelings as well. And how this causes hang-ups between any male-female relationship.
I don't think necessarily that the male is unable to express feelings. I think many females might be.
Yes, but we have this stereotype of like a male who's not to get emotional or lose his cool. You know? I don't know, that hangs me up a lot. Sometimes I like to see a man really cry, you know? If that is what the situation calls for. And I don't know that it is.
I'd have to agree with you that this is part of our society, that the man is supposed to be strong and not show emotion. I don't know if it's just American or what, but I know one of the things that I admired or enjoyed quite a bit when we were overseas would be the German people, the way they get together in a restaurant and put their arms through like this, you know, and sing and give vent to their feelings. And here we look down on it somewhat. I don't know how many boys and girls have seen their dads cry, for example. Maybe they should. And may I just comment on the display of feelings here? As we came up here last Monday, I noticed that Leo got off the bus and Andy came up and threw his arms around him. And I thought that was great. You know, when I was a boy, the way I was raised, I'm afraid that, you know, well, you might shake hands with somebody, but that might be about as close as you get. You don't show your feelings and demonstrate. And I think it's great. That he does, you know, that this is the feeling there, and that he can express these types of feelings.
You know, it's nice that it's spontaneous, because the child is constantly told, you must kiss grandmother when she comes over. And then the grandmother is the kind of person who doesn't just kiss you, but she squeezes you so that you feel like you're being loud. This kind of a thing, you know, isn't too good either. I've seen this over and over in situations where kids are forced, you know, dragged out of their little corners and go, okay, and they're one child that just wants to run off and doesn't want to, you know, just kind of tell them all the way around.
Remember the joke that one of the ministers told us in our group the other day about the child after a sermon?
Yes.
Was talking, was running around, and he came up and said to the minister, your sermon was boring, and ran away. And then came back and said, it was too long, and there was a woman observing this, and she came up to the minister, don't pay any attention to him. He's a little retarded, and he's simply repeating what other people are saying.
Well, I've got feelings right up to here now in relation to what you said. I have to get them off my chest. And that is that, please, when you have children, don't ever say, well, now, son and daughter who have been arguing, now, son, kiss your sister and wake up. I mean, yeah, somehow or another, I don't know, maybe that is the basis for some of my problems, but... This is just the same thing, you know, kiss grandmother, such as this. I think what it needs to be a natural feeling and expression, not artificial.
And this is one of the problems that I have with worship, that so many of my feelings in worship are artificial. I'm looking for the day when I can, in worship, cry. And unfortunately, I have cried for myself. And I've been in a couple services lately where ministers have cried, and they've announced the death of a member of the congregation and their toast. And the congregation cried. Or when the communion service can be a celebration. Or when children, when they have to go to the bathroom, can just get up and walk out and go to the bathroom and come back without parents shushing them. That when feelings can become a part of my natural and not artificial expression of emotion.
When you can take away those barriers and really let yourself be what you honestly are.
I don't see nothing to change for a while, man. I know that you get something really like the part of time about. I mean, you're human.
But one of the problems that Kenny's mentioned, one of the reasons we have so many sensitivity programs for high-powered executives is that we see a definite relationship with holding in one's feelings at all times. And so major companies are willing to spend $1,500 or more to send their presidents and vice presidents to 5 days, 7 days, where they simply have to relearn again how to cry or how to be angry. Or how to show affection. Basic things that we have covered up with this veneer until, but our body can't take it. And so it comes out and alters other kinds of physical expression.
I think that's emotions. That's
great. Something I know in the university that we talked about a lot is that how strange this expression of emotion to take a lot of these things. Like you were saying in worship, how you worship, you can just express yourself with the feeling for joy and for penitence that would cause you to cry. And yet go to a basketball game or go to a football game and look at the emotion there. Man, I mean, you see people throwing things because of their anger or jumping in the air because of their joy. And yet, in the church setting, which, should have an equal, or there is an equal class for emotion, you don't see anything. You don't see anything.
Especially Lutheran churches. Especially Lutheran churches. Well, this, I think, is probably a part of our hang-up. Parents come and they say, instead of, how's he getting along with the others, is he behaving good in school, Does he act good? This is a tough question I have here as a teacher, and you go to a parent meeting or a parent comes to a conference. The first thing they ask, and what they mean is, does he sit in his seat like this with his hands folded and listen to everything that you tell him, and then does he go ahead and do it? No.
Well, a parent asked me that once, and I said, no, he isn't, but he's certainly a bright student. I mean, I love him with her, And if he stood still, he'd be better. He wouldn't be a brighter, I mean, if he put attention, he'd be a bright student, But I told her.
But he wasn't. He didn't be.
Oh, this is the sort of thing, though, that I remember when we were children, we went to church, that was the way you were to sit, And if you came from communion with a grin on your face, a silly grin, this is unpardonable,
You had a good time with God, huh? Why don't we all grin tomorrow night?
Sunday night, yeah.
We can have a conspiracy, just those here that know about
it. Big wonderful.
It's our little child. If you feel that way.
Okay. Well, it's just like having your picture taken, If a dog rolls up a little rabbit and he's gonna laugh, or smile. And maybe you don't think the rabbit is funny, you don't think the dog is funny. You don't, and the picture turns out ugly.
You don't.
You're right.
I think that's interesting. I think today's generation is more honest in that regard. As I recall, it was the thing to do years ago, this is one of the troubles. I speak for other people, I can speak for myself. It seemed the thing for me to do was to smile. This probably was one of those veneers or one of those masks, when the picture was taken. That here is a AOL Met fellow or something when the proof is out here. And I think today's people are more honest on this because our son or such might have a picture taken, was very curious. Well, the way he feels, that's probably the right move.